So, Terrence, thank you so much for joining us here today on ScoreNotes.com. How's everything going?
Everything's going great with me. How's it going with you?
Doing excellent, sir. First off, just right up front, I'd like to ask, what was it like for you personally to have worked on a project like Red Tails?
Well, I mean, the only way to describe it is an honor. You know, when you look at the story and you look at the sacrifice that these young men, and I mean really young men, gave for our country, for them not to receive any type of hero's welcome, I think was a travesty. And I just feel very honored and privileged to be part of a film that just tries to show the heroism they portrayed in just doing their jobs, you know, and the amazing sacrifices they gave, you know, for this country.
Indeed, indeed. And at what point did you get involved in this, and what were some of the conversations that led up to the scoring assignment?
Well, when I talked to Anthony Hemingway, he brought me involved. He brought me in the project rather early. I mean, they had finished principal shooting. I think they had finished principal shooting, and then they were doing a lot of editing. And, of course, with a film like this, there's a lot of computer graphic stuff that goes on to it. It took a minute for them to finish the film. But some of the earlier conversations that I had with him and George Lucas was, you know, we weren't looking at this as a black film. You know, this is a film about American soldiers who happen to be black. You know, you look at what they did. You know, not losing any bombers. That's an amazing feat to accomplish. So we wanted to try to portray their heroism music. And then on a personal note, you know, I conveyed to both Anthony and George, I said, what I wanted to do was not only portray the heroism, but give the music just a little bit of ethnic flavor, just to kind of make it distinctive, like the Plains were themselves with those Red Tails.
Was there any type of pressure, kind of knowing the stakes of something like this, you know, as you started scoring this, or were you able to just kind of scale it back and just focus on it as if it were, you know, another film project?
You know what? It's interesting that you asked that question, because I remember years ago when I was working on Malcolm X, there was a set designer named Wynn Thomas. And, you know, the big buzz for all of us when we were in the middle of the production of that film was everybody wanted to do 150%. And Wynn said something to me that, man, it really stuck with me. He said, the best thing that we can do is just do our jobs, you know. And that's the way I looked at this film. You know, it's an amazing story, and if you get caught up in the story as a composer, you definitely will become overwhelmed by it. But the thing that I tried to do is just look at what the story needed, you know, how the film needed to be serviced, and do my best to convey, you know, what the director, producer wanted inside of what it is that I was creating for the score.
Yeah, I had a chance to listen to the music. I thought it was really wonderful in that, you know, never at one point did it feel like the music soared over the top, and it didn't seem to play to some of the typical conventions we've heard out of film music these days. And how were you able to kind of achieve that balance? It's not easy, I'm sure, you know.
No, it's not easy, but, you know, that goes back to my upbringing as a jazz musician. Art Blakey used to tell us years ago, you know, never play above your audience or beneath your audience, just play straight to them. So I didn't try to think about manipulating anything, you know, any type of storyline or any type of emotional drama. I didn't think about manipulating any of that stuff. Really, I just tried to stay with the actors in the story, you know. And there is a fine balance, because sometimes, you know, I'm questioning myself, am I going over the top? But then you say, well, no, but it feels right, and you have to trust your gut. That's because that's the only thing you have at the end of the day, is your instincts. And, you know, having done a number of films, you know, you get to a point where you have to just say, okay, I know what it feels like. Maybe I'm overthinking this because I'm in the middle of the project. Let me take a break and step back and try to bring in some objective views, either through my orchestrator or some other people that I work with.
Now, being able to play off the ensemble cast, must be a good way to strategize any score, and it seemed like there was some really good talent involved in this film. Can you just talk about the performances of the actors themselves and what director Anthony Hemingway brought to the table?
Well, I think he brought together an all-star cast, and when I say all-star, I don't mean like in the terms of being a superstar. I mean in terms of, you know, people who did their job, you know, who were great actors. I mean, come on, I mean, Terrence Howard and Cuba Gooding, I mean, right there, you're talking about immense talent, immense history, and professionalism. Then they have all of these younger guys who are up and coming, some of them who are big stars in their own right, in terms of like Neo, Tristan. You know, I thought all of those guys were amazing, you know, but the one thing that I think that you have to really check out in this film that I loved is that all of that talent, nobody stuck out. It wasn't about an individual thing. It's almost like the actors themselves understood that this was about a group performance. This was about, you know, being on a team. And that's what really shines in the film to me, the whole notion of what it is to be a team. I mean, when you look at the LSU-Alabama game, you saw what happened. I don't know if you heard about the story about Alabama watching Red Tails before the game.
Yes, that kind of motivated them.
Yep.
You know, and I think the other team watched Contraband with Mark Wahlberg, so there you go.
Which is an individual story.
Right.
And the thing is, I'm a big LSU fan. So.
Oh, yeah. A little bit of irony there.
Yeah.
Come back and get you. You guys did maybe too good of a job. The one thing that strikes me out of this whole thing is just being able to take something positive away. It's a positive movie-going experience, but it's not a historical drama per se. George Lucas set out to make an action movie and help, you know, capture the mind and attention of younger audiences. Can you just talk about, you know, what that means to be involved in something like that?
Well, it's an amazing opportunity. I mean, you know, because we get a chance to motivate a lot of young minds. And I know George was walking a fine line and straddling that line between doing a historical drama and doing something to motivate young minds. You know, but I got to tell you, you know, I told you earlier, I just came from investiture ceremony of Nanette Jolivet Brown, who's the first African-American woman to be appointed to the federal bench here in Louisiana. And at that ceremony, after the ceremony, there were a lot of judges, a lot of, you know, federal people there. They all were talking to me about the movie. You know, some people they knew some Red Tails who have actually seen it, you know, and all of their responses were very positive. So it's almost as if, you know, George knew exactly what he was doing in terms of inspiring a debate about what these guys have contributed to our country. And then along with that, he's made a documentary that goes deeper into the details about what it is that they did, you know, for us.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of movies. When it's done the right way with the right intentions, you could deliver entertainment and kind of an educational session too, I think.
Well, that's the thing that makes me feel very proud about being part of this. I've been a part of a lot of great movies, and this is one of those where, you know, there's just a buzz in the community, wherever I go. I mean, I was just amazed to have all of these federal judges coming up, I'm going to be there tomorrow. You know, it was an amazing feeling because I was there for our friend. But a lot of people are very pumped up. I mean, and the thing about it, you know, I think another part of the story that should be told is that a lot of the people that I'm running into, they were either related to or knew of somebody who was a Tuskegee Airman. They are extremely proud of the fact that there was a movie done about these guys.
Yeah, no doubt. It's something that should be remembered, something that should be celebrated. But I also want to point out that there's a little bit of a fun movie-going element to this, too. So is it safe to say, you know, if you enjoy action movies, you can still get something out of it on that level as well?
Oh, are you kidding? If you enjoy action movies, man, this movie's amazing. I mean, the aerial fight scenes, the way George put those things together, the graphics, I can't explain it, but, you know, it's I've never seen any aerial footage like this. You know, and the way that it's put together, you know, it's so riveting and compelling, you know, that it's almost as if you wish the film would stay up there in the sky the entire time.
Mm.
It to me, it really brilliance, you know, and the high level of achievement these guys achieve. You know, we're pushing these planes to their limit. I mean, literally pushing them to their limit. And, you know, sometimes we don't get a chance to experience that in film. You know, you'll hear guys talk about that in like race car films or, you know, or whatever. But, you know, George, man, he put something together here that will give people a chance to experience something that I know they've never experienced before.
I mean, to put it in perspective, if I hear like a rickety noise in my car, I get nervous. So I could only imagine what it's like, you know, all the way up there. Can you just touch on also the choral elements that you wove into the score? I thought that was a really nice touch.
Thank you. Well, you know, to me that goes back to the whole emotional element of it in terms of trying to show the heroism of these guys. You know, there's a fine line that I tried to straddle in terms of the music totally being heroic and also servicing the film in terms of the action. But we also tried to have a strong thematic line that could be used in a lot of different ways to help people stay in tune the purpose of these guys, their purpose for being there. Now, it's hard to explain, but when I was working on this film, that's the thing that never lost me. That never left me, you know, why they were there, you know. And you got to remember, with everything that they were going through, people doubting their abilities, and they were the cream of the crop. They just stayed the course and made sure that they did their job when they were called upon.
To be able to retain that focus amid so many distractions and unfair situations,
yes,
that's another element that really stands out. And just from a soundtrack perspective, I think fans will be able to hear kind of another side of you when they listen to this score, you know, as a soundtrack experience. How pleased are you with how the soundtrack came out?
Well, I'm amazed. I'm extremely pleased because, you know, this was something that I got a chance to do that was totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different, you know. To be able to write a score like this for a film like this, you know, is a rare opportunity. You know, and you know what's funny about it is that, you know, I kept saying, oh, yeah, wait a minute, this is George Lucas. Right. And when I talked to Anthony, yeah, okay, no, let's push the envelope. Let's just keep going bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And it just worked. You know, so I feel a large sense of gratitude for having the opportunity to do this because it's something that I never got a chance to do otherwise.
Yeah, well, when I look at it, it shows me your versatility. I mean, you're out, you know, in the other arena of music and music performance and such, and you step into a movie like Red Tails, or you do something like When the Levees Break or Malcolm X type situation. I mean, that's just a testament to your versatility. I mean, do you kind of just, how do you stay prepared for any given assignment when it comes to film scores like this?
Well, I mean, first of all, you're always checking out other scores. I mean, let's just be honest about it. So, you know, a lot of guys don't want to talk about that, but it's true. I get inspired by other people, but at the same time, I think what it really boils down to is letting the story tell you what it needs. You know, Miles Davis used to say that about playing jazz. He said the tune will tell you what it needs. You just got to learn how to listen. Because sometimes, you know, guys will play a ballad and play all of these notes, and then you go, wait a minute, whoa, the tune is calling for it. And then sometimes the tune calls for things that are more that are busier. So, I mean, you know, it happens with film. The same thing happens with film. I'm working on a film right now called Superstars, a French film, directed by Xavier Galliani. Gaianalelli. Woo!
There you go.
Yeah. And the thing that's interesting about working on this film is that the same thing is occurring in a very different way. You know, it's a very different type of score. But I'm allowing the film to tell me what it is that it needs. And then as you start to flesh it out, it starts to appear in front of you, and then you just kind of go from there. I think what some young composers may make their mistakes is thinking that once they acquire a certain vocabulary musically, that they have to use that vocabulary. And I'm thinking, no, that's just a springboard for where you go. Every film is a moment of discovery.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that's probably what separates, you know, the composers from one level to the next, is I think the story probably has to speak to you on some almost intangible level.
Oh, it does. I mean, because some of the things that I've done in the past would never work for Red Tails. Never, ever. Right. You know, and like the film that I'm working on now, some of the things I did in Red Tails would never work for this film. You know, and no matter how hard I would try, you know, it would start to look, you know, abnormal. So, you know, because for me, you know, the telling of a story, you have to take your lead from the way the film looks, the tempo of the dialogue itself, the accents that are used, the way the film is cut. You know, all of those things start to indicate sound rhythms to me.
Yeah, and I actually wanted to ask you, I noticed with your music, you give your music room to breathe. I don't know how to properly explain it. But there's a certain tempo in your work where you allow both the scene and the film itself and the score itself to kind of proceed forward in just the right manner. Is that something that could be explained, or is that just something that's in you?
Well, it may be something that's in me because of the Miles Davis connection through me. I mean, I've always liked music that had space.
Mm.
But I think a good part of it is I can't remember the director I was talking to. This is years ago, early on in my career. It could have been Ryan Shelton. I can't remember who it was, but they were telling me, you know, talking to me about trusting the scene, trusting the performance in the scene, you know. And sometimes we tend to overthink things, you know. And one of the things that I try to do now is that when I'm working on a scene, if the performance is right, I truly don't want to get in the way of it. So I try to make sure that there's room, you know, for all of those things to exist. You know, and sometimes the music may not need to be there. I mean, sometimes when I work with directors, they may ask me to write a piece of music for a scene that I frankly think doesn't need music. So I may do something that's very sparse.
Nice, nice. It takes a certain kind of discipline, too, because I would imagine, you know, you're a composer on a movie. Maybe if you're a younger composer, you want to try to maximize the amount of screen time your music is heard or whatnot, but to be able to just get caught up and lay out the story properly, you know, sonically like that, that's great to hear.
Well, you know, the reason for that is because, you know, I'm just like anybody else. I can get tired of hearing my own music. You know, and I don't want that to happen, but you really want it to be seamless with the story, you know. And I think you have to take your ego and chuck it out the window, you know, because it's not about me. And I think that's where my career as a jazz performer helps me. You know, I don't need a film to try to kind of, you know, stroke my ego. I don't need that. You know, I play with great musicians that I tour with, and we have a lot of fun playing music. That's a totally different musical situation where we get a chance to say what we want to say musically.
Mm-hmm.
So with a film, I get a chance to say what I want to say in terms of how I can help a director, producer tell a story. And for me, the story is the most important thing. That paramount story. Everything else, you know, falls way behind that.
Yeah, and on that note, I want to tip my cap. You really came through with this one in what is probably not a very easy assignment. So, you know, thank you for delivering some good music for us to enjoy.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the comment.
No problem. And I hope, selfishly speaking, hope to hear more of you in the film music world. I know you're busy in other arenas, but I hope you can pick up a few projects here and there as we move forward, as you have been, because it's really a delight to hear your scores in these films.
I appreciate you saying that. I'm having fun doing it, though. I'm on the search.
Nice, nice.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us today.
All right, man. Take care now.
Bye-bye.